Hey everyone, it is Alexa here, Something Sinister Podcast. You might notice something a little bit different. I have a male counterpart right here. This is my husband, Tony, as everyone has heard, Antonio, on the podcast. Say hi.
Hello, hello.
So some things have changed a little bit. Obviously, you've heard that Cadence is no longer part of the podcast at this time. I know. She's so busy in her life and the theater. So we're changing some things up. We are keeping it true crime and comedy and fun and drinking. So we have some margaritas here. That's what we're sipping on. Our Something Spiked. Cheers. You know,
sorry, that's bad luck.
Yeah, I know. He's terrible at that. But we will keep the same like theme. We're going to keep the drinking word. We're going to do all the fun things that we did previously. So I hope you like it. Speaking of drinking word, before we get started, I think the drinking word for this story should be missing. So.
Well, I don't know anything about it. So.
I know. So if I say the word missing, we have to take a drink.
Got it.
Okay.
Right, missing.
Okay. So our videos and podcasts are for entertainment purposes. All information discussed was found on the internet. Keep in mind, we will talk all things sinister that may not be suitable for all audiences. Viewer and listener discretion is advised. So Tony knows nothing about this story. So we are talking about Dr. John Forsyth. He was an ER physician in Cassville, Missouri. So Cassville is what, like 30 minutes away, 40 minutes?
Yeah, down south.
Yeah, like 15, 20 minutes away from Republic. So it's not far. So this is like our neck of the woods, as we would say, part of the Ozarks. So it's very close to home. You know,
which I can't believe I haven't heard anything about it. So,
yeah, we don't really watch the news. I guess our news is like social media. So, yeah. And we didn't really see a lot on the story, like on social media. I don't think you even saw like anything.
Mm-mm.
So, the story is kind of crazy. Dr. John Forsyth, he was an ER physician in Cassville, Missouri. And, you know, he was also a husband, well, soon to be husband. He was engaged and a father of 8 kids with another one on the way. So he had potentially 9 kids before he was murdered.
Busy boy.
Yeah, exact. So 6 days after my birthday.
Am I allowed to drink without the drinking word?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. But we got to take our first drink. So a little bit about John Forsyth. He got his medical license on July 1st, 2005 from Ross University, which is out of Miramar, Florida, which we've been there. It's right outside of Miami. Mm-hmm. But he worked for Mercy Hospital in Cassville, like for his entire like career. So, which was 15 years, which is crazy. I mean, a little more than 15 years, but he worked a lot and he would often pick up like extra shifts because he was an ER physician. So he had an RV that he parked in the parking lot because whenever he was tired, like kind of what we heard about the NICU, but the NICU doctors, but whenever he was tired, he would just go out to the parking lot and take a nap and then pick up the next shift, you know, a couple of hours later. Mm-hmm. So that becomes like part of a significant part of the case later is the RV, the whole situation there. A couple of things that we're going to talk about with this case is number one, like the background, but also how his brother plays a very big role into this case. It's super crazy. It's super crazy because his brother throughout the entire time that he's been missing. Drink. And just so everyone's watching, I keep pointing at the mic. Tony's new to this. Mouth to mic. Mouth to mic.
I can hear
mic. So his brother has had so many interviews throughout the entire time that he's been missing, which is just like kind of weird if I think about it.
Missing Missing.
You know, I'm like super close to my family. You're super close to your siblings. Like, mm-hmm. I feel like the last thing that I would do if one of my siblings was missing would be to talk to anybody and everybody, like, via interviews about my brother and his case. Like, I don't know. I feel like before I knew what had happened, that he was murdered, like, I don't think I would go public with anything.
You'd probably be, like, too distraught to do interviews.
Exactly. Like, I would be, like, what the hell? Where's my brother? I don't want the media to, like, take over my life. But, yeah, so his brother, Richard, has been talking to anybody and everybody. There's a couple of quotes that I'll state here in a little bit. But, like, it's just weird. He talked to 20, or he was saying that he was going to have an interview with 2020 and, like, all of this. So, obviously, this is a really big case because his brother went missing and it ends up turning to be a very dark case. Yeah. But it's just kind of weird, you know?
Very, yeah.
So, continuing with Mr. Richard, Richard said in one of the interviews, quoted, "I think he crossed paths with some bad folks and he didn't tell me about them." Like, what brother would say that?
That's pretty a generalized statement.
You think? I don't know. I think the brother's kind of
suspect. Odd, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that's kind of a generalized statement to kind of maybe throw off the investigation, you know?
Yeah, maybe.
Like, try to look over here, there's bad people.
Yeah, I know. So, I don't know. I think his brother is a suspect, in my opinion, but we'll talk a little more about that. According to, like, everybody that he worked with, the hospital, all of his friends, he was super happy. He was super energetic. He was happy about life. He had a baby on the way. His fiance, you know, was the love of his life, and he was super excited to, like, introduce her to his family and, like, friends and everything like that. And so outside of that aspect, like, nobody suspected anything. Like, nobody thought there was anything, like, weird or negative or wrong in his life. So for him to just all of a sudden go missing one day, it's kind of crazy.
Yeah. Definitely.
So what happened on May 21st? John was working a 12-hour shift at Mercy Hospital. He got off at 7 a.m. He texted his fiance and said that he would be heading home soon, like shortly after getting off of work at 7 a.m. in the morning. The next thing we know is he's at this public pool area in Cassville. And again, it's May 21st, so pools aren't open yet. Like, it's right on the cusp of being open, you know, mm-hmm. for Memorial Day.
Right.
But next thing we know, we see his black Infiniti, and it's parked in this, like, public pool area. Like, it's not in the parking lot, but it's in, like, this wooded area kind of behind the building. It's kind of, it's really weird. And then he got into another vehicle. So you see, like, in the video surveillance, there's another vehicle that pulls up and he gets into that vehicle. But in his vehicle, he left his keys, his wallet, two phones, and his laptop, plus his work briefcase, U.S. passport, not his Canadian passport, because he was from Canada, born and raised in Canada originally. So his U.S. passport is what he left, not his Canadian, which was kind of strange. He left his RV key and the car unlocked. So he left everything.
So he thought he was just going to be gone for a minute.
Yeah, that's right what back. I think. Yeah, or he knew something was happening. Like, he knew that he might be dying, so he's going to leave everything. Because I feel like if you're gone for a minute, you're going to take, like, at least your phone and your keys and your wallet, yeah, and you're going to come back.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, that's very odd.
Yeah, so he left everything in his car, and he left it all unlocked. And then, again, like, his fiance was freaking out because she's the last thing that she heard from him was that he would be home soon. Yeah. And then on the cameras, it showed the last thing that he was wearing was a black shirt, bluish gray pants. And then obviously, like, his description was he was fairly tall, like kind of your height and build, almost 6 foot, 180, 200 pounds. But it's just weird. Like, he legit vanished from that point in time.
Yeah, no kidding.
So the officers began searching for John that day because fiance was very, like, worried. She's like, what in the world? He should be home. He just texted me. He's still not home. It was like 12 hours before the officers decided to do a foot search. So they started a foot search looking for him. They had a bunch of dogs, other officers. They did a 9-mile search. They even used drones to locate, like, the heat sensitivity of a body, you know, everything like that. And they didn't find legit anything. All they found was his car and everything in his car. So continuing with the investigation, there's been a lot of conflicting information about this case. Number one, like, was it crypto involved? I mean, my thoughts, kind of, I think so. I'll talk about my thoughts in a little bit. But as you know, like, the crypto world's dark.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all on, like, dark web. And I'm pretty sure there's a bunch of crypto, like, owners or whatever that, or founders that are missing, that are killed.
Missing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but are they missing or what happened?
Mm-hmm.
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, dun. So another thing to note too, which I didn't say, the family is a Mormon family. So John and Richard, like, they grew up in a Mormon family, like, in Salt Lake City, Utah.
Okay.
Born in Canada, obviously, Canadian passport. But so they have a bunch of siblings, right? But him and Richard were the closest. And in my opinion, he is, like, my number one suspect just because of the things that he said in his interviews. Like, I think it's really weird that, number one, I already talked about it, but that he just continues to interview whoever wants to interview him for money, but also just some of the things that he said and some of the quotes. Like, for instance, he said, "If you're gone because of good reasons, we understand, but we want to see you soon."
Yeah, that doesn't seem normal.
No, it's not normal at all. And, like, again, your brother has been missing for a short period of time, and this is what you decide to say.
Yeah, missing.
Another thing he said is he'd never miss a day of work, even if his eyeballs were hanging out of his head. Like, I'm sorry, but I would never say that just in general. Like, that's not, yeah, like, a general statement that you would say.
Definitely not.
No. He said, again, "I think he crossed paths with some bad folks and he didn't think to tell me about them." And then on an interview with Elijah Haar, which Elijah Haar is a Springfield local. He, like, ran for some political office or something, but mm-hmm. he has his own show and did an interview with him on June 15th, which was only 25 days after he had gone missing. And, I mean, obviously, at this point in time, they knew that he had been murdered. But listening to this interview, Richard was, in my opinion, like, not sincere, not emotional. And there were a lot of times where, again, like, he's not really emotional other than, like, laughter. And watching other interviews with him, it's not like a nervous tactic. Like, you know when people laugh because they're uncomfortable?
Yeah.
It wasn't that. Like, he was legit, like, laughing throughout the interview, which I found very uneasy.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, in the beginning of the interview, he said that he wanted to clear some things up about what had been communicated to the public. He proceeds to talk about, like, the security camera footage, and then he says, sorry, I've got my wires crossed in my head. So, like, he's trying to get a story straight whenever he's being questioned and asked about his brother and the situation about how he went missing and what's going on with the vehicle that pulled up next to him and why he got into the vehicle.
Okay, so they had released the video footage. Okay,
yeah.
So it's not like he knew about it before anyone told him. Okay.
Uh-uh. I believe, and I don't know the specifics. Well, I read, but I don't know if it's true. I believe he was told what had happened before he saw the video footage. Like, maybe the lead detective or investigator or something like that decided to tell him kind of what was going on. But just for him to say, sorry, I've got a lot of wires crossed in my head. Like, to me, that's somebody trying to fish for.
What wires are you crossing?
Yeah, and why are you?
There should only be one.
Yeah, there's only one wire that's telling you the information.
The truth, yeah.
Yeah, the truth. So, I don't know. I just thought it was kind of weird, the whole interview. And he wanted to state a lot of the stuff that was shown on the security footage was incorrect. Like, there was one story where he had said that there wasn't a vehicle. And then another story, he's like, oh, yeah, there was a vehicle that my brother got into. So the stories just weren't.
Yeah, now it's definitely him.
Yeah, like, I don't, and again, I don't think he directly, like, killed his brother. I don't think that's it, but I definitely think he was involved because the brothers were involved in this cryptocurrency business together. Like, it was their business. They were making millions of dollars, and I think he knows what happened.
Yeah.
For sure.
When you throw millions into the pot, there's some...
Yeah.
Some weird stuff that goes down.
Exactly. Money speaks volume. Mm-hmm. So, let me get to the next part. But the security camera footage, going back to the security camera footage, it shows John arriving at that pool, like the public pool area, at 7:12 a.m., 3 minutes later, what looks like a white SUV pulls up next to his car, but no humans are seen interacting. So you don't see, like, John going to the car, like, talking, or another person, like, getting out of the vehicle and talking. 15 minutes later, what he says, Richard says, what looks like my brother gets out of his car, walks around for a little bit, and leaves his car. So now the story has changed again. It's like, wait, did he get in the white SUV or did he not get into the white SUV? And why does your story keep changing?
Yeah. Super red flag.
Right. So again, like I said, the car was found in that wooded area outside or behind the public pool, which is just kind of weird too. And then his brother, Richard, says, I think the car was meant to be hidden. So, again, this entire interview, it's like, what in the world? Why are you saying all of these things, incriminating yourself? You're telling the story. Like, your brother was meaning to hide the car, but for what reason? Only a reason that you would know.
Like, you didn't know there was a camera in that? At that facility?
Yeah. I mean, I know it's Cassville, but come on. Like,
sure, it's 2023.
It's 2023.
Well, at that time, it was what?
It's 2023. Just May. Okay, yeah, there's cameras everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay. Everywhere. So.
You can't pick your nose out on the street without being on a camera.
Seriously, though. Seriously. Another thing that's very weird is, in one of the interviews, he said that he had gotten a call that evening at 8 p.m. from one of the lead detectives stating that his brother had been missing. But then in the same interview, this is the interview with Elijah Haar. So he said he got a call at 8 p.m. from the detective. But then he said he received the information at 2:30 in the afternoon. Then he said he received the information at 12:30. So when is it? He went missing at 7:12. Like, that was the last time that he was seen on camera. Mm-hmm. And first you say 8 p.m., then 2:30 in the afternoon, then 12:30.
Huge difference.
Huge difference. I mean, we're talking hours, like a few hours to 12, 13 hours later.
Yeah, this is way too weird.
Right. Very coincidental. Like, he's all over the place of this timeline. It's a coincidence. So, continuing with Richard, on September 15th, which we're going to talk a little bit more about in a second, but on September 15th, he actually had an interview on KY3 with Elizabeth Van Meetry. She's a journalist here in town. And he had told this crazy story about how, but he also had told this story too to other interviewers, but he told this crazy story about how a mutual acquaintance had told him that John was kidnapped previously. He was zip tied. It was in the middle of February last year, February 2022. He was frozen half to death, and the people ended up letting him go. And so it's weird because he apparently was let go like half naked, zip tied, ran through the woods to this friend's house, and the friend opened up the door and saw that he was like zip tied, half naked in the middle of February. And it's like, what's going on? He's like, you can't tell anybody that this happened, but I was just kidnapped and they threatened my life. So Richard is telling this story, and a couple of things that I find like very disturbing is he had said, if I take into account the kidnapping, which I find very disturbing, if this is about his activities, I don't know anything. I think this has to be related to the kidnapping. So when I listen to the things that he says, it's like he knew about the kidnapping that had happened, but apparently John only told that one person, and that one person told Richard after he had gone missing. And so, I don't know. It's like all the dots are connecting that Richard knows a lot more than what he is acting like he knows.
Yeah, this is all too weird.
Yeah, it's all too weird. It's all too coincidental. Another thing he says in this interview with Elijah Haar, and it's like random. Like, I had to rewind it and listen to it a couple of times because I'm like, wait, did he legit just say this? He says they don't suspect any family members, which is good to know. I mean, we don't suspect any family members.
Okay, yeah.
But in the interview, it's like random and it's out of the blue.
Yeah. That's super weird.
Like, why would you say that?
Yeah.
I would never, like, if again, 15 days later, 25 days later, however many days later, I would never be like, nobody in the family suspected. I'd probably be like, everybody's a suspect at this point in time.
Yeah, we have none, so.
We don't know what happened to my brother.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he said that multiple times throughout the interview, which I thought was kind of weird.
I'd probably slap the cuffs on him by now.
Oh, yeah, you would think so. Like, you would definitely think that somebody would have, which we'll talk a little bit about. But I keep quoting him because in my mind, it's the only thing that makes sense. Like, after reading hours and hours about this case, it's the only thing that makes sense. He continues to talk about other interviews that he has had. He ends up laughing again throughout the interview. And he says to, let me see. My guess is he was protecting me and others as in regards to the kidnapping. I worry that he may have died protecting me and others. And then he says, I want to honor that sacrifice if that's the case.
What? What in the world?
Yeah. So I think the brother throughout every interview, if you just piece together everything that he says, he is saying, in my opinion, that his brother was involved in cryptocurrency. It got very dark and he ended up, like, unfortunately sacrificing himself to maybe save his family. Like, we know the cryptocurrency business is dark.
Yeah, well, I think it's more of an unknown, you know. Most people don't understand it.
Right.
So, yeah, naturally it is.
Well, now it's like not even an option.
Yeah, it's definitely fallen by the wayside. But, if the brother, if the dead brother was sacrificed himself and the other brother, Richard, knew about it.
Yeah.
Then I feel like he would want to maintain silence.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and not do 5 million interviews and right. be on the camera all the time.
Right. But I think in his mind, like, maybe he thought, oh, this is going to, like, take the suspicion off of me if I, like, talk to people and do interviews with people. But in my opinion, it's doing the complete opposite.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like all eyes on him.
Yeah, exactly. All eyes on him. So fast forward to the 30th of May. So he went missing on...
I'm sure you said missing a few times.
Yes, I did. Fast forward to the 30th. 9 days later, his body was found in Beaver Lake by a kayaker. So Beaver Lake in Arkansas. Mm-hmm. So initially, the case was taken over by Cassville PD. But because the body was found in Beaver Lake, well, now it's moved to Benton County, Arkansas. So his body was found with a single gunshot wound to the back of the head. So execution style.
Okay, I kind of remember hearing something about that.
Do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
A while back, okay.
Yeah, it's triggering.
Yeah, yeah, I remember hearing something about that.
So, but another thing that's crazy is during the interview with Elijah Haar, his brother said his body was found on the 29th. His body wasn't found until the 30th. So it's like, again, his story just doesn't jive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I could, if it weren't for all the other weird things.
Yeah.
Then I probably wouldn't think anything of that.
Yeah.
But it just adds to the pot.
Right. Right. Like, your days are mixed up. Your times are mixed up.
Yeah.
You're talking about his body being found on a completely different day.
Yeah. Stories are changing.
Right. It's completely different. So another weird thing is whenever the detectives were obviously, like, investigating and they're trying to find any lead that they can possibly find, they go into the RV. And again, his RV keys were in his vehicle, right?
And so they had it, yeah.
So they had the RV keys. His RV was left unlocked. So it's like he was wanting all of the stuff to be found. And in his RV, they found an additional 2 cell phones. In the car, there were 2. Then they found 2 more in his RV.
Who has 2 cell phones?
Who has 5 cell phones, yeah. 5 total, because they ended up finding another one at home.
Not even that.
I mean, a physician, it's kind of known that they would have, like,
a work phone,
2 cell phones. Yeah, like a work phone that the hospital gives you and then, like, your personal.
Oh, I had 2 as well.
Yeah, like, that's pretty common.
5.
5? 5 cell phones. 5 cell phones. So that's kind of where the RV comes into play, and that he left it unlocked. Like, that was very unusual. It's like he was wanting stuff to be found.
Did he frequent this pool area
that
his
no.
car was found?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. No, not at all. Not at all. So, Cass, like I said, Benton County then took over the case. And then Missouri State Highway Patrol took over the case too. But Missouri State Highway Patrol only took over the missing persons case. They didn't take over the murder case.
Wait, so they didn't close the missing person?
No. They still have it open to this day.
Even though they found the body?
Even though they found the body.
Wait, that just seems...
Because they think that it was a possible suicide. They don't have a lead on the prime suspect yet. So they're leaving it open as a missing persons case, which I think is very weird because they have a body.
Yeah, he's not missing anymore.
Yeah, but last that I had checked, it was like I don't know, beginning of October. It was still an open missing persons case.
But it was like identity confirmed, right?
Identity confirmed. Okay. Yeah. Weird.
Okay. Yeah.
So Benton County is investigating the homicide case, and apparently the FBI is involved too, but I think the FBI is only involved because of the cryptocurrency situation.
Sure.
Right? Like, yeah. Like that only makes sense. So again, 9/15, so September 15th, the update.
And there must be some substantial money involved too.
Well, they had $1 million+ crypto business. Yeah. They were millionaires. Yeah. Another thing too, which I didn't really talk about, is they say like a lot of the interviews state that he had just gone through like court with his ex-wife for like, I don't know, child support or whatever. And he was determined to pay like $15,000 a month in child support for his other 8 kids. And the brother had said, like, that's not a problem. Like, money isn't an issue. So we're talking about a lot of money. And as an ER physician in Cassville, Missouri, like, he's not making that much money to pay $15,000 in child support.
Yeah.
So.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, it's, I don't know, it's weird. But, so September 15th, he ended up having an interview with Elizabeth Van Matry, and it's like a 30-minute interview, so you can look it up on Google if you just Google KY3 interview with Richard Forsythe. But it's very, very interesting. Number one, you see his body language, and it's just, it's so telling. Richard's body language is so telling. Mm-hmm. He's also telling the story over again, and the story just doesn't mix. It's crazy. Like, just watching him, and I can't even imagine, like, being Elizabeth at that point in time. She's sitting, like, next to him, and they're facing the camera. And she's, like, having to ask him all of these difficult questions. And imagine, like, he could have murdered his brother.
Yeah.
Like, legit could have murdered his brother.
And he's sitting there in front of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right next to you. Yeah.
Creepy.
I know. So he stated a couple of things which were different in this interview versus past interviews. He stated the kidnapping was indeed, so the kidnapping back in February of 2022 was indeed related to the crypto life and that whole side of the business. So my number one question is, why was John kidnapped and why wasn't Richard kidnapped?
Yeah, all these things are happening to John.
Right, right. Second thing, Benton County Sheriff's Office served a warrant, and this is coming from Richard, served a warrant to Richard's home in August looking for his gun. The investigation concluded that John was shot by a 40-millimeter Glock, and Richard owns a 40-millimeter Glock.
Shut the front door.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the interview a couple of days later concluded that the detectives had thought that Richard knew more than what he was saying. Duh.
Yeah.
And he also stated in this interview with Elizabeth that he didn't bring a lawyer because he has nothing to hide.
Huh.
He's like, I'm an open book. Ask me whatever you want. I have nothing to hide.
And always changing open book.
Yeah, always changing open book. And why do you keep, yeah, why do you keep changing your story? You know, I don't know.
That is kind of weird. He would come in without a lawyer.
Yeah.
And very weird.
It is very weird that he would decide to not come in without a lawyer.
I feel like that would be a common strategy, you know, like I'm not going to make it seem like I need a lawyer.
That's like, yeah, that's like Ted Bundy's strategy, though. Like, Ted Bundy's going to represent himself.
Well, he was a genius.
He was a genius, but still.
Bad one, but.
Yeah. So another thing that he had said in this interview with Elizabeth is that he had taken a lie detector test, and he failed the lie detector test. And he believes that the detectives study the process to try to make people fail the lie detector test.
Sure, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. He said, I'll take the lie detector test 100 times. And then Elizabeth even asked, well, why do you think they have their eyes on you now? And he said, I think they have their eyes on me because they don't have anything else. This has proven to be a difficult case. I have no idea if they actually think that I'm a suspect. I think he was put where he was killed because that's where they were. Who's they?
Yeah. Yeah, now there's multiple killers? Is that what it is?
Yeah, he's saying they.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. Like,
because that's where they were.
That's where they were. It's weird because if you think about it, like, he said all these, like, cryptic quotes and interviews. Mm-hmm. Then he has a 40 millimeter Glock, which is the same gun that killed him, that killed his brother.
Pretty common gun, though.
It is a pretty common gun, but what are the chances with everything else? Like, adding up, what are the chances?
Yeah, circumstantial, but...
Right. And then he fails a lie detector test.
Which is not admissible in court, so unfortunately, like, they can't really pin anything yet.
But it shows credibility to his...
Oh, definitely, yeah. I mean, I am... There's too many red flags here to be... For it to be anyone else.
Yeah, for it to be anybody else. And again, yeah, I don't think...
Leads.
Maybe he didn't kill his brother. Maybe he knew who killed his brother. But the whole gun situation and all of it, it just doesn't add up to me. I don't know. It doesn't add up to me.
Yeah.
He said that also, you know, one of the last things too... Oh, this is what... Sorry, I was like reading my notes and I got confused. But... One of the last things that Richard said to John's fiance, because let me back up. Richard had just met John's fiance like a couple of weeks prior to him, his disappearance, right? And so one of the last things that John had said to his fiance was that she could trust... John had told his fiance that he could trust his Richard, his brother Richard. And if it was the last person on earth to trust him, but she had just met him. So I'm wondering, like, if I think about this, could they have owed other cryptocurrency people money? And maybe they determined that Richard wasn't a good fit.
And this was the fiance that said that John told
John.
John
had said to the fiance to trust Richard.
Is it the fiance that's relaying that information?
No, it's Richard.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
So, okay.
So is that even true?
Exactly.
Or
yeah, that's what I'm saying. That's
yeah, like is he like trying to make himself to be like credible, you know? Like,
exactly,
oh, I'm
yeah.
a good guy and I'm a good brother to my brother.
Yeah, like that'd be like me, like I'm the best husband. I'm the best husband ever.
Yeah.
And the most trustworthy husband ever.
Yeah.
Even though you're missing.
Yeah, even though you're missing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another, I don't know where this kind of came out of nowhere, but another thing that Richard had said too in this interview with Elizabeth is he said, I said that it would be pretty hard to track information down if this has anything to do with crypto. If this does have something to do with crypto, I'm not surprised that they haven't found out a lot of answers. So in the beginning of the interview, he had said the kidnapping was related to the crypto business. Now he's saying there's a reason why they don't really know anything about this case is because it could be potentially related to crypto.
Yeah, that's super weird.
It is weird. It's just like, it's not coincidental. Another thing, so you had asked if the body was identified.
Mm-hmm.
The body apparently was identified, but not by any family members or even his fiance. Nobody to this day has seen his body.
Hmm.
So that kind of gets like my conspiracy wheels going and probably yours too, if we want to talk about the previous like crypto people going missing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if you're talking millions of dollars involved, then A little payoff will do a lot.
Exactly. But they haven't seen his body.
Yeah, that's what
none
I'm
of
saying,
the family.
So.
Like, what?
I mean, I'm not trying to get, like, you know, the city's involved or the ME's
county,
involved or
yeah,
whatever.
Or the
you know,
FBI.
But, yeah. I'm not trying to get like that, but hell, in this world, I don't know.
Yeah, right?
Money does a lot.
Yeah.
Money talks.
Money does talk. Mm-hmm. To further it, it was a closed casket funeral.
Because he was shot in the head, right?
Shot in the head. But again, mm-hmm. they haven't seen the body.
Sure.
Still. Okay. The brother said, I believe that we buried my brother. Hmm. So, he had said, I hope to God that he didn't suffer much. He was a brave man. Throughout this interview, he said that. And he had also said that he was scarred for life because of everything. He hoped, you know, again, that he didn't suffer much. Throughout this interview with Elizabeth, his body language was weird. You could tell that, I don't know, sometimes, like, you could tell that he was trying to, like, force emotion. Like, there were times where he was kind of trying to cry, and other time, I don't know, it looked really fake to me. So
yeah, you know, they always say people grieve differently, and
yes,
you know, I don't know, though, I'm trying to sit here and justify it for him, but in my head all signs do point to him. Yeah, there's too many weird circumstances.
And how many, like, true crime documentaries have we watched where, like, the serial killer or the lead suspect, there's like no emotion, or it's like forced emotion, and you can tell that it's like completely fake. That's exactly how it was whenever I was watching him on the KY3 interview with Elizabeth.
Yeah, see, that's weird.
Yeah,
but I'm sitting here trying to, like, give him the benefit of the doubt, but yeah, too many weird things.
Yeah, very very weird. So, there are no updates with this case as of today. Benton County is, like, apparently not communicating with anybody. They're not communicating with any news stations at all. People, like, multiple journalists are reaching out, like, asking for information. They won't relieve any information at all to anybody, which is super weird. And I don't know if that's because, like, the FBI is involved. I don't know if they don't have a lead. I don't know if the lead that they have is the brother and they're trying to pin it. But it's super weird that there's zero information past.
Well, I think that's pretty common, because if they're on the trail of someone,
mm-hmm.
and that person knows a detail that hasn't been released.
True.
You know what I mean? They've got to keep everything under wraps, or they've got to release information, like, very methodically, with maybe like a fishing line, you know, like, here's
right.
I'm going to throw out this sinker here and
right.
see if we can get a bite.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, I feel like that's the way the interrogation process and the,
yeah.
you know, investigative process works.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think they're going to release all the information that they have yet, because they need a solid lead. But I don't know, for them to just be silent and, like, not say anything.
I mean, that tells me that they have very little, but maybe they do have something.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going to communicate with anyone else. They don't want it to get out.
Right.
Hopefully.
Right. Another thing, too, that the brother had said that I didn't quote, but it's, like, coming back to me after watching, is whenever he had told Elizabeth that they had served a warrant, he was like, I don't know why they served a warrant, because I had told them that they could come into my house at any time. Which, in reality, if that's true, think about it. A detective's going to knock on your door and say, hey, can I come in? Do you own a 40-millimeter Glock? And your answer is going to be yes or no. And if it's yes, then he's going to be like, okay, can I test that for evidence or ballistics with the case of your brother? And if you truly had nothing to hide, you would say yes. But the reason why they got a warrant is why? More than likely, he had said, no, you can't come in. And no, you can't take my gun.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, like, and if they allude to the fact that they're looking for a gun or something, then
right.
that gives, he can just be like, no, I don't have one, or I don't have it, and then he can get rid of it.
Right. Exactly.
If they want to eliminate any time for him to dispose of it.
And I want to say maybe I had heard another interview like previously where he said he didn't have a gun. But maybe I'm making that up. But I swear that I had heard that he had told another interview that he didn't have a gun. So he made it seem like he was all good and innocent when in reality he's not.
Fall in line with all the other details he's changed.
Yes, his story continues to change. So, but that's my theory. Dr. John Forsyth, cryptocurrency person, ER physician, and granted, he saved a bunch of lives. I didn't go into detail about like his physician career. Apparently, he had like medical misconduct and stuff that had happened. But
malpractice or something?
Yeah, but like any other ER physician, that's pretty common. True, like people just want to sue nowadays just because. So what truly is the validity? I mean, all of his coworkers said nothing but nice things about him. So, but, you know, ER physician, well-known in the Cassville community, well-known through Mercy Hospital, and had a baby on the way. The baby was born the following month in June, which is sad. And went missing and murdered.
So he was a younger guy.
Yeah. I mean, like, late 30s, early 40s.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. So, yeah, went missing and found murdered with execution style, unfortunately, and they don't know what happened.
That is so wild.
Mm-hmm. In our neck of the woods.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's usually something that you hear about.
Like elsewhere.
Yeah.
Not 30 minutes away from where we live.
Exactly.
Well, that is the story of Dr. John Forsyth. Again, this is Tony, my husband. Great guest tonight on the show. I hope you all enjoyed it. And as always, stay sinister.